Again, Dale Armstrong, most of you all were in the first session yesterday, and I hope you gained a lot of good information from that. I look forward to his part two right now, and then his part two this afternoon, or part three this afternoon. But I'm going to turn it over to Dale, and we'll go ahead and get started with session two. Dale?
All right, Brian. Everybody give Brian a hand. He'll just get some energy in this room. Thank you, Brian. I mentioned, how many were not in here yesterday? Okay, quite a few. So I'm going to do a quick recap, but before we start this video, I'll explain the video in a minute because he's got to get to the next room. But what I want you to do is see this video. There are about 9 or 10 of these that you can go to He Gets Us, if you'd write that down. HeGetsUs.com and HeGetsUsPartners.com. HeGetsUs.com and HeGetsUsPartners.com. This is one of the ads that ran, and I'll give you a little background into that in just a moment. But I wanted you to see it because it fits perfectly with the work you're doing. But this is geared to skeptics in the United States and cultural Christians, okay? And so if it's a little edgy, I'm just asking you to, you know, if you want to talk afterward and say, wow, I can't believe you showed that. It's not that bad, okay, because we did calm it down. But I do want you to see this because it's about Jesus giving and being born by a teen mom, okay? And y'all can relate to that. So go ahead. And He Gets Us Partners. I'll explain how you can connect to HeGetsUsPartners.com in a moment. Okay, go ahead.
A young girl had a boyfriend. She got pregnant. She was scared. How could she face her parents? What would they say? Can't hide something like that forever. Her parents asked who the father was. They assumed her boyfriend, but baby wasn't his. He loved her so much, he offered to help raise the child with her. They married and found a small place. They had very little money and no insurance. One evening, her water broke. There wasn't time to get help. He delivered the child and lay him in a manger.
What about y'all? That gives me chills. Can we go to God in prayer to start this? Dear Lord in heaven, God, we love you. We're humbled to be in your presence every day. Lord, we know that you know what we're doing and the work we've got going on. Lord, we know you know the needs of every organization, of every child that's being helped, of every mother that needs help. Lord, of every family, God, that the first institution you created was family. And so, Lord, we come to you and we implore you to show grace and mercy on those people. And Lord, to provide for these organizations the funds, the information, the ideas, God, the courage, the stamina, everything that it takes, God, to do excellence, to work with excellence in this world, Lord, for people that need it the most. So God, we give you this next hour, and we pray, Lord, that there will be some information here that would be valuable. In Jesus' precious name we pray, amen. So if you were not here yesterday, I kind of teased that we would show this. And if you look at that website, let me just give you a little quick background why I'm sharing this. The Signatory took on a charge to do a study around the country to find out. Obviously, we're in a different culture today, correct? This cancel culture that we live in, it's different than it was a few years ago even. And there's some people in the country that were very concerned about that and wanted to find out what to do about it. How do we take on changing this culture back for Jesus? I mean, when you take the name Jesus and it becomes a hate word, right? Something's wrong in America. And so with that intent, there was a 650,000 person study. Took over 6 months to conduct with the largest research firm in America. And what came back from that was fascinating. So what we were testing against was basically the question, when you hear the name Jesus, what do you think? Okay, what does that mean to you? And what came back in a nutshell were Christians, committed Christians on one side, agnostics and atheists on the other, and in the middle were 54% of the population, broken up into two groups, basically split in half, 27% each almost, of skeptics and cultural Christians. The skeptics are those who have had a bad experience, or they've been reading stuff online, or they've heard the things in the media, big tech, big media, and when you hear the name Jesus as being a hate word, they're just skeptical, right? And the age demographic is 18 to 34 that really this fell into. And it's where we lose a lot of our kids that may have even grown up in churches. And the cultural Christians are those who, whatever's the cultural norm, they kind of say, I'm a Christian, but yeah, I believe in that too, right? And we know biblical truth would say differently, okay? And so the goal was to, how do we reach them? From that, there was a pilot done over the last 6 weeks of the year that was linear, which means television ads, on CNBC, CNN, ABC, ESPN. We ran this during NFL football games. It was on every social media platform. There were billboards across the country. We went into cities and had churches lined up so that if people wanted to reach out, there's a funnel that those folks went into when they got online, and they would actually land in the inbox of the church for those people to be reached out to, or there were live chats, et cetera. There was just a lot of things going on. During that six-week period of time, over 30 million people saw this commercial and one other one. It was remarkable. There were people that, so inside that ecosystem and that funnel is also YouVersion. We had thousands and thousands of people sign up to YouVersion for the first time, reading the Bible. And obviously they can check and track every verse they read, what plan they're reading, what problems they have. And so we knew their felt needs going in. And so the pilot was very successful. And then we just launched during March Madness. And this is the fifth week. And to date, look on my phone, but to date there's been over 121 million as of yesterday in America that have seen these ads, billboards, and gotten into this system. And the reason I'm sharing that with you is there's an ecosystem that's available now, as I mentioned yesterday, like an Amazon that started with books, but this ecosystem's been being built for the last 10 years. It's a company called Gloo, G-L-O-O. The founder of that is a very committed Christian. They were partners in waste management, sold that, and then got into all kind of other businesses, so they're very wealthy. They've put almost a quarter of $1 billion into this company, and there's 35,000 churches that are already in the ecosystem that are a part of this, and there's nonprofits that are part of this, and there are city orgs that are a part of this. And so I wanted you to be aware, go check it out. And if you got questions, what that can do for you guys is be a part of this ecosystem. It's also where Barna does all their research, so it's done through them. So you can actually do the state of the church. If you've seen that, they can do it of each church. They can do campaigns and customize those like this. It's remarkable what's there. And what's happened is there's been 64 million people leave the church and stop going, and they're not coming back like we would like for them to during the pandemic. But what is happening is there's a lot of people that are hurting, and they're going online and they're searching through the web, and so we're capturing them through this attention getter of He Gets Us in all kind of forms. And so a lot of the people that you may serve, we're focused on their needs, broken relationships, anxiety, fear, you name the cause, and these people are searching for answers, and so we're plugging them into that. And so we're trying to just share with everyone, because the goal is to reach that last person for Christ. And this is a huge, huge ecosystem that's been built. Everything can be shared now, as I mentioned yesterday. It's almost, the ecosystem is different than wells and windmills, right, for farms. It's not just what I do for mine, it's what's available now for everyone. And so this ecosystem is going to reach across all nonprofits that are Christian-based and all churches. And so it's a big effort, and I wanted y'all to be aware of it and take a look. So if you weren't here yesterday, How many of you know who the signatory is at all? Are you wondering what's this about? Anybody? What's the signatory? Okay. If you haven't looked, we're a donor advised fund sponsor. We actually have a couple organizations in here that that receive gifts from us. And so we're no different than a Fidelity, Schwab, Vanguard, except we're Christian. Okay. And I went into a lot of things yesterday about the differences between who we are and who they are. I don't want to spend a lot of time there, but I would encourage you to see that when people give to a donor advised fund, they get a deduction. They then can grant that out based on the grant policies, which for us are pretty simple. We believe life begins at conception. Marriage is between one man and one woman, and the only way to heaven is through Jesus Christ, not any of the isms, okay? So that's kind of the guardrails for us. The other thing that's very unique about us is we don't charge any fees. So for the money we hold, we charge zero fees to the donors that have the money there. It's called asset under management fees. And we also don't charge any money, no fees, for doing a asset-based gift, okay, which can be very significant. It's typically 5%. And so we have a different business model that allows us to do that, okay? So what am I here to try and do today? Yesterday I shared with everyone that was in the room that where the real money is, and I'll just start it with this. Most of us, and I was in the same place you are, my background has been some in nonprofits and some in business. And part of that was working at Lipscomb University as their senior development counsel. Prior to that, I owned a consulting business and did probably 100 campaigns around the country with churches, nonprofits, et cetera. And so had some experience in this space and literally thought, well, the way you raise money traditionally was you find a donor who has some wealth, and how do you know if they do, right? It's kind of a toss-up. Well, they own a business, or they're a doctor or a lawyer, or who knows what, or somebody says they do, but nobody really had a good handle on, okay, yeah, they've got some, oh, they have a big house, or you can go look at their tax record and see what their house is worth. And there's some tools out there in the marketplace that are really not very good, if you want my opinion, of tracking what's out there and what their capacity is. And so I thought that was the way you did it. And so when you went to ask for a major gift, and let me ask you, are major gifts necessary for your business? Yeah, they're becoming more and more necessary, right? So this topic of major gifts, I'm gonna step it up a minute, because what you've been fishing in, and I was up until probably 6 years ago, and then I got on the board of what was then the Middle Tennessee, what's now the signatory, but I was on a board that was with NCF, National Christian Foundation, prior to that, okay? And what I realized was that 90% of all the wealth, okay, and I'm going to show you a couple of slides here that'll show you this. 90% of all the wealth, though, in America is tied up in appreciated assets. Closely held shares of businesses, real estate, et cetera. Anything that you can get a valuation done on it. 10% of the money in America is in cash. The challenge with that is that 8% of the 10 is in retirement funds. 401k, 503b, et cetera, okay? And so giving in America has been being tracked for about 45 years against AGI, your adjusted gross income. And giving in America has been flat for 40 plus years at 2-3% against your adjusted gross income. And so what we've been doing is we've been trying to raise big dollars from a 2% pond while we should be fishing in the 90% pond. Does that make sense? If that's all I shared with you today and you get that concept and you leave here and you start thinking differently about your major donor, because I've asked for a lot of gifts in my day. And what I would typically do is go in, and the best research I could find would basically be, what have they given in the past, right? That's a good place to start. And then what do I know about their business? I didn't know anything. Matter of fact, I never really even asked questions about it, okay? I just knew, well, they're $1 million donor, or they're $500,000 donor. And we lumped people in these categories, and it was really, it's really a shame, because if we knew more about them, we could relate to them differently, right? And so what I found was, when I learned more about this space and appreciated or asset-based giving, that you can ask these questions and you can uncover information that is incredible. I mean, I literally will have meetings, and in a 30-minute meeting, I'll have people send me their estate plans, because the difference is talking about if this is the checkbook side of their ledger and where they typically give from, this is their balance sheet. Where's all the assets? It's on their balance sheet, okay? And what we've been worrying about is we would do this. Chandler, like, share my vision about Agape. Here's what we're doing. Love for you to be a part of it. Would you make a gift of $100,000 over the next 3 years to help us with this campaign? Can we count on you to do that? Okay? That'd be about the end of it, right? And then it's yes, no, and then you figure out where they land, right? That kind of thing. What I want to share with you today is a different way to approach your donors. The other thing I want to share with you is you don't have to know the intricacies of the tax law. You don't have to know all about the businesses that they own, whether it's a C-Corp, S-Corp, partnerships, LLCs. It doesn't matter if it's taxed as an S or not. None of that matters. But it does whenever we get into the weeds. What you need to know is how to identify these people and who fits this category of, there's wealthy and then there's ultra wealthy, right? Okay, and if you could get a few of those up here in that top level, that'd be good for your organization, okay? And so this is not just for them, because there's people that have assets, and if you've read The Millionaire Next Door, a lot of people that have a lot of money, you'd never know it. That's a good thing, okay? So what I want you to do, first of all, is be able to identify. Number two is to be able to know what questions to ask, okay, that would lead you to understanding more about their business. Okay, so that's what we want to get into. I'm going to show you some slides here. The next session, there's going to be some other slides with some demographics that show, okay, if you make this gift before you sell a company versus after you sell a company, what's the difference in money, right? Can you give more if you sell first? Let me just ask this question. Can I give more money if I sell my business and then make a gift versus giving my business away and then making a gift? Does that make sense? Sell, then give versus give, then give. Okay, I've lost you. Okay, good, because that means there's some education to be done. What most people do is they sell their business and then they go give what's left over. And so they've paid all the federal taxes and they've paid all the capital gains, versus gifting whatever portion of that company or property or whatever it is, gifting it before. And write this down. This is the most important thing you need to know. They have to do this prior to a purchase agreement, okay? Prior to a purchase agreement, or this will not happen. And a lot of times you'll hear someone say, well, I've already signed an LOI, okay? And that doesn't make any difference. Letter of intent, okay? So when somebody's trying to sell their business or they're prospecting their property and a company's like, oh, I'm interested, and they sign an LOI, a letter of intent, that means nothing, okay? As long as they haven't signed a purchase agreement that has the details, we can make a gift happen, okay? And sometimes it can happen within a couple of weeks, but there's a lot that has to go into it. And so we vet with our attorneys and go through that whole process with them. But you need to know they can't do it until they've done it prior to to a purchase agreement. So here's the point. If they sell the business, then give, they paid all the taxes. If they gift the shares of that company into a donor advised fund, they're going to pay zero cap gains, which is 23.8%, and they're going to save worlds of money in federal taxes. And typically they're going to be at the 39% rate if that's typically where they're going to be. So you do the math. Okay, it's a lot of money. So if we can save them a lot of money, then we can allow them to give more to the causes they love. So here's the question that I ask, and it works every time. Honestly, I've never had this question not work. So here's what you need to ask your donors that fit these categories that I'm going to share with you. If I could share with you how to save taxes and give more money to the things you love, would you be interested in having a conversation? It's that simple. That's what you need to know how to do. The takeaway, the walk out of here, what can I do and apply, has to be that simple, okay? Because from there, the next call is to say, we have a partner, okay, that will work with us, and I'd like for you to meet them. They work with the largest Christian philanthropist in America. Okay, we've been doing this for 22 years. We've done over $5 billion that's come in and given away over $4 billion, okay? So about 75%+ every year that comes in goes out. Because we don't hold the money and make money on what we hold, we want it to go to the kingdom. So whoever's willing to kind of dig in and find out, if you can do a little prospecting on your end, right, then we can kind of come get the gold and help get all that done and then distribute it back to you. And here's the, I mean, there's a lot of things that, basic stuff that you can pick up on here today, but for one, if someone has an adjusted gross income of $1 million and they sold something and they gave away $5 million, well, then they can't write it all off that year, right? Okay, they don't need that much deduction. But the law, the tax laws allow us to give, make a gift, and then you can use it in that current tax year, and then you have 5 additional tax years that you can use that and carry it forward. So it's wonderful, and that's how people that have a lot of wealth, if you want to know the truth, the financial side of it, that's how they don't pay as much taxes. So when you hear somebody's not paying a lot of taxes, it's because they're gifting a lot of their assets and getting huge deductions and offsetting their tax burden, okay? And hopefully they're giving it to where it's going to make an impact on the kingdom. So let me get into this just a little bit with you, okay? So the topic here was not doing things traditionally and what's possible. I used the scripture yesterday, my favorite scripture. Now to him who is able to do, say it with me, to do immeasurably more than we could ask or imagine according to his power that's at work within us, Ephesians 3:20. And then you go down to the next verse, verse 21, it says, for the glory of Jesus Christ and all generations, right? It's not just for us, it's for these next generations. So, major gift opportunities. So what you see here, the problem with how we give is what we have is 90% of the giving comes from non-cash. Cash, okay, that's what's being given. And 10%, 90% of the wealth is non-cash, and 10% is cash. What we give is 80% cash and only 20% non-cash. And some of you guys may have done some of these kind of things with boats, cars. You know, people give, you know, something that you can, that's a tangible, something that has a, that you can get a ride, but it's normally small stuff, okay? There's a whole nother world here, okay? So that's the problem with how we give. 90% is in non-cash, but we're given 80% of the giving comes from cash. So it's already been taxed. There's less there. That's that 2% pond that we've been swimming in for so long. Here's one that you need to understand. And so when we look at all the things that people can give, all right? If you can you read that in the back? It's pretty small. Yeah. What this says at the top of the funnel is cash and publicly traded stock. How many of y'all get some of that? Okay. Everybody does that. Automobiles and trucks. Boats and RVs. Collectibles. Okay. That can be jewelry. That can be artwork. That can be different things like that. Miscellaneous other non-cash stuff. Most everybody's getting some of this top of the funnel. And I'm going to jump down to the bottom. How many of you have something that you're trying to focus on because estate planning is a big deal, right? Nod your head because the answer is yes, okay? All right. and people do stuff here. But what's interesting is where all that 90% of wealth is tied up in these three pieces, okay? Residential real estate, business inventory, commercial real estate, and business interests is right in here. And no one has been doing anything here, okay? And they've been doing it only on their own. And the people that have the knowledge to do that, to gift their assets, take the deduction. This whole idea of donor advised funds has been around since 1914. So it's nothing new, but you have to know how it works. So that's where the wealth is in the business inventory, is in residential real estate, commercial real estate, and business interest. So let me give you a couple examples. Guy builds his business, and he lives a normal lifestyle, and it's a manufacturing company. How many of you have anyone in the manufacturing business that's a donor to you? Okay? That's an outstanding client, okay, because they're phenomenal, because typically they have they got a lot of business inventory, they've depreciated that down, they typically make a lot of money and pour it back in, and those are great businesses, okay? And so if you've got some of those people, those are going to be people you want to look at. The best gift for a non-cash gift or an asset-based gift, though, is real estate. Because with real estate, you can actually put real estate in a donor-advised fund, and you can leave it there forever. It's the only asset you can do that with. I just went off. There I go. Am I back? Okay. So with real estate, you can take that piece of real estate, and whatever your basis is and whatever you sell it for, that's your gain, right? And you're going to get fair market value when you deduct it. So that's a wonderful thing. And you can put that in and you can leave it in. If it's a rental piece of property, how many of you have people that are donors that have rental properties? How about commercial rental properties? All right, so I'm seeing a lot of hands go up. So if they donate, unless they don't have to even donate all of it. So one of the things you need to know is they don't have to donate the whole house or the whole shopping mall. They can donate a percentage of that because most of those are held in LLCs. They're not, okay, so when they gift those, they're not, sometimes they gift the LLC shares, sometimes they're gifting real property. It just depends on how they've got it structured. But the cool thing is they can give 10%, they can give 20%, they can give 50%, and where you start with that is what their adjusted gross income is. So you want to know, so we try to figure that out so we know how to work backwards to know what the gift should be for them, okay? But those pieces of property can go into a donor advised fund, they get their DAF, and if it's rental income, then the rent then goes into the DAF to fund it. The property hasn't been sold, okay? So it just stays with them or in the DAF, and it continues to stay there, and it can stay for generations, and it can actually be bought back. So if they want to put that back into their estate plan later, they can buy it back and gift it to their kids, okay? Or they can leave it in there and have their kids give from those dollars that are being generated there, and they're earning interest while it's in there, okay? So that's kind of where we want to focus, is on what these things look like, residential, commercial, business interest. So when you go back, you need to know what are the things we're going to look for are those type areas. So I mentioned yesterday there's a great transfer of wealth that's happening. It's between 60 and 80 trillion, depending on who you ask. If you take just 1% of that, that's 60 to 80 billion, okay? That's enough money for all the Christian causes to do all the work we need, but we've got to get a hold of where the wealth is and how to participate, okay? Because it's not going to happen again. So between the ages of 59, and let me just say why that won't happen again. So we know that with the third generation, most of the time you have a patriarch, matriarch that starts a business. Second generation comes in and continues to build on that business. Third generation either sells it or they run it out of business, okay? But that money is gone after three generations. Over 85% of all the wealth doesn't make it past the third generation. So if we're not hitting this and taking advantage of this now, we're going to miss that opportunity. So between 59 and 68 trillion is there of wealth is going to be transferred. The Boston College study, the heirs will receive 36 trillion. I went over this yesterday quickly, but here's the cool thing, 27%. And here's what's neat, you know, if heirs are receiving this, is it important as a major donor to know their grandkids and their kids? Okay? You better believe it is, because if that matriarch, patriarch are fixing to pass this along and they've been giving to your organization, the chances of them continuing to give today to the same organizations has declined rapidly, okay? The kids today, they don't want to give to the same organizations their parents did. They want to give more one-off things and tangible stuff that they can. So you've got to get them engaged in what's going on, okay? Which speaks to how you really want to learn to communicate with your major donors. But $27 trillion of this is going to go to charities. 20 plus trillion over this period, 6.3 trillion at death, And by the year 2061, this money's going to be gone. Estate taxes will be over $5.6 trillion. Now, does the kingdom need that, at least 20% of that capital gains, or does Uncle Sam need it, right? And so the estimated women will inherit 70%. So that's what's really happening, and that's what we need to be aware of. So the possibilities are incredible. I put this in here because the global M&A market, which is mergers and acquisitions market, I mentioned yesterday there's between like 150 and 220-something businesses a month sell in the United States. That did not decline. During the pandemic, it actually went up, okay? And so a lot of people were scared. There's a tremendous, tremendous amount of money that is out in the marketplace today of people trying that are private equity people that are trying to buy companies, okay? And a lot of people are trying to sell their companies. So where the big money is being made is in this space, okay? It continues to average over $4 to $6 trillion annually. So that means that's how many businesses are being sold every year. That's a huge market for us to tap into, okay? It's driven by demographics, okay? It's driven by the type of business, it's driven by the age of the people, and it's driven by which sectors of business are working today, all right, and are most easily sold. So if you're in the tech space, you got a tech business, then you're going to get a multiple on your business if it's doing $10 million or more. And here's a number you need to know. Most businesses will not sell unless they're doing at least $10 million in revenue a year, okay? But when they reach that threshold of $10 million a year, then you've got a multiple of 10 to 15 in the tech space. What's that company now worth? $100 to $150 million, okay? So most businesses that are getting in a tech-based business, they try and grow it to $10 million in revenue as fast as they can, and then they sell that to some private equity group, and they take their money, and they're done. But they're sitting now on $100 million or more, okay? So knowing who's in this space makes a difference. The stock market perceived value. I don't have to talk to you much about that if you watch it at all, right? So it's up and down. It fluctuates based on a lot of things that happen. So the next piece says to most don't involve charity. Why is that? Most of the business owners don't involve charity when they sell because most of the time people don't know to talk to them about it. They don't know, oh, by the way, have you considered gifting, or do you have any plans for charity? Are there things that you care about as your family that's really, you know, that matter to you? Well, if the answer is yes, well, then if I could show you how to save taxes and give money to those things, would you be interested in having that conversation? That's all you need to know. And then what you do is call us, and then we get on the phone with you, and you can have those conversations with us, okay? But it's because they're CPAs, and their investment bankers don't have the charitable lens. They're not concerned about you. They're concerned about them selling their business because they're going to make 20% of that sale if they're an investment banker, right? And what I didn't believe, I mentioned this yesterday, I didn't believe when I got started here that people didn't know this. I didn't believe, my CPA did not know. When I opened my own donor advised fund and I had some appreciated assets that I gave, and put it in my DAF, I got a big deduction, and I was like, he's like, what is this? what's a DAF? Donor Advised Fund, okay? He didn't know. There's a lot of them that don't because they don't have, there's only a million, there's what I tell you, yes, there's a million donor advised funds in America and growing at about 40%. This space has grown 300% in the last 10 years. It's going to continue to grow. Okay, I mentioned yesterday there's 40,000 private foundations out there, families that have their own private foundation. Even if they have a private foundation, we now help them set up their own donor advised fund, and what happens is it gives them anonymity. So the private foundation that has the wealth makes a gift to their donor advised fund, and then the donor advised fund gives to the charities. Okay. Because now the gift doesn't come from their donor from their private foundation, which is public information, but it comes from their DAF, which is now anonymous, or can be, okay? Or at least to the government, to the IRS it is, all right? It's a great question. Why would a business owner or a donor, whether it's land or business, why would they have a reluctancy to do that? Number one is they're unaware. So it looks, can this be real? Okay, so there's some skepticism around it until you give them some information. Number two is if they're selling a business that they've been building, okay, and they may have partners. Okay, so let's say it's a C Corp and they've got, you know, they're 30% owner and there's 10 other shareholders, okay? It depends on what their corporate docs say. Are they allowed to do that? Now, if they give that away before the sale, then they have to get those other 10 people to either agree that they're giving that away, because now when it sells, who's at the table when it sells? Now it's not that individual, now it's the signatory, because they've gifted those shares to the signatory. We own those shares, okay? But we're non-voting, so we're not going to goof it up, okay? But sometimes that individual may be like, I don't want to goof the sale up, okay? Or the timing, okay? So sometimes people will get to us and they think, oh, here's a great opportunity that they think they can give it away, and it turns out to not be a good deal, okay? It's got all kind of hair on the deal, all right? And so that's what we vet for. Now, one thing I will say that we've done to mitigate that thing about being at the closing table is we will come in and we do a buyback agreement with them. So we're not seen at the table, okay? They've gifted the shares to us early, but we do a buyback with them, and then when they get paid, they then pay us back. So we're not at the table. So we do some workarounds to do that. But good questions. So 1% is 40 to 60 billion. Let's keep going. Can somebody tell me when I've got like 20 minutes, because I want to get through these slides. Okay, just Chandler, would you do that for me? All right. Key opportunity with major donors. 88% of giving comes from 12% of donors, according to Giving USA donor research. That was this past year. Okay, so that's a lot of your budget. 12% of your donors. In capital campaigns, I've done over 100 of them. You typically have had 95% of the money in a campaign is going to come from 5% of your donors or less. Would y'all agree with that? If you've seen that and you've done that, that's just the way it works. So your major donors, you have to know where they are. So this is absolutely critical. The Chronicle of Philanthropy says, pursuing wealthy donors is a matter of survival in a time when fewer people are giving. The number of donors is going down. So major donor work is more important than ever, okay? Major gifts drive growth at many nonprofits. Y'all agree with that? Okay, if you want to build a building, if you want an endowment, if you want to do new work, if you got a new home, you name it. If you need vehicles, whatever the capital needs are, this is absolutely critical. Charities should get serious about seeking planned gifts. Okay, these conversations that we have around asset-based giving lead to your conversation around estate giving, because we are all about family and we're all about generations. Okay, so we believe that your wealth, if you have $25 million in net worth, then you have what is considered in our world dynastic wealth. Dynastic wealth means that can pass on for five generations if it's structured properly. And so we can help people understand, how would you like your children, grandchildren, and their grandchildren and their grandchildren to be able to say, my dad was he was generous, and then my granddad, my great-granddad, etc. And you pass that along, because what's more important than passing on money is passing on your values, okay? And that's where the topic becomes really fun, when you help them sew down where their values are, okay? So this leads to that, but what we're talking about are annual gifts. This is current giving. This isn't estate planning work, okay? But you need to be serious about estate planning, seeking planned gifts, given that a huge transfer of wealth is projected over the next decade. So who are the major donors, okay? They're core business owners. They're the guy that starts his own company, okay? It may be in the dog food business. there's a hot market in America right now in pet business, believe it or not. It is massive, okay? And they're selling like crazy. If it's in the dental practices, okay, there's five billionaires in Nashville. Six now, I'm sorry. There's six billionaires in Nashville. One of those is in the dental practice, but he doesn't own a dental practice. He bought dental practices, and then he pays the dentist to work for him, okay? So they buy up dental practices, and that's what they do. That space is hot as it can be. Core business owners. So you need to know your donors. What kind of business do they own, okay? Serial entrepreneurs, okay? This isn't about me, but there's been some things that I've done that worked. There's been some things that I've done that haven't worked. How many of y'all can relate? All right. And so you bump your knees along the way. The CEO of The Signatory, Steve French, if he were here telling you his story, he started 20-plus companies and exited 20-something companies. So he started and sold 20-some-odd companies. So he's had a lot of experience in this space. His last one was called Quovent in the software space for the legal space, okay? And what he would tell you is the serial entrepreneur, when they start a business, they're looking for a 2 to 5 year exit, 3 to 5 year exit. They want to start it, grow it to a certain amount of revenue, and then they sell them, okay? And that's where a lot of people are like, man, he's 35 years old, and the guy's, you know, he's worth millions of dollars. Well, he learned how to do that well, and he starts businesses and sell them. So serial entrepreneurs, people that are developers, real estate people today, fall into this category, okay? We know a lot of realtors, right? People that build stuff, like Solomon Builders in Nashville, okay? That business, they've been a client of ours for a long time. The amount of revenues they give, they bring in are astronomical. They've actually got 3 years of work already on their books, and it's ridiculous, the kind of money that general contractors are making today. Retired halftime people, okay? How many of you know some of those, okay? They're the guy who's worked hard, they've done well, and they don't know what they're going to do. Here's the guy that you want to put on your staff. Here's the guy that I want to hire, okay? Because he understands business, and he's a perfect guy to go talk to all the business owners he already knows. So you bring him on and say, just go tell people what you did. And say, look, if you want to save taxes, you can do it this way. Like Steve, our CEO, Steve would have never been in this space. He sold his last 10 minutes. He sold his last company, and he went to meet Mr. Barnhart in Memphis. Okay, if y'all know the Barnhart family, Alan Barnhart. And when he left there, he realized if I would have given my company away before I sold it, he would have saved $4 million in taxes. You can do the math, okay? And he was furious because he didn't know about it. And about 3 months later, he meets Bill High, one of our founders, and that led him to be a part of this space. And so don't let people sell their business before they give it. Heirs, surviving spouses. How many of you know someone whose husband died and had a business? That's someone that you need to have a relationship with and understand how to connect, okay? Because now they're sitting on a tremendous amount of wealth and they probably don't have any experience, more than likely. Professionals, okay? Who are these people? All right. If you're thinking doctors and lawyers, some lawyers, yes, but doctors probably not unless they own their practice. Most practices you can't gift because they have to sell those to another professional. So if I'm a dentist, I can't gift it into a donor-advised fund, so take dentist off the list, okay, in most states, okay? But other doctors, if they own the practice, they can fit, but they're typically not your best choice. Corporate executives, again, these kind of from top to bottom, this is how I would rank them as well. Corporate execs, what they're going to have are stock options, right? Okay, but then if they've got those kind of stock options, then what you need to know is how many other properties do you own, okay? Athletes and entertainers, they're not great donors for the most part. They have a lot of cash and they're very well protected, and most of them, that's just our experience. You may have a different experience, but they do have wealth. If you can get some of those, that's great. And then private foundations, okay? Major donor business issues. So the major donor, the business owner, these are the things you need to know that they want to talk about and that you need to understand, okay? So identifying who they are and then understanding the conversation. The business owner, the growth of their business. If you know someone, first question is, how many employees do you have? And if I know what space they're in, I can tell you with about five questions how much money they're generating in revenue every year. So let's say it's an engineering company, and they've got 100 employees. They typically pay their people about $70,000 a year, those engineers. So that's $7 million of cost right there. They're high end on the cost side of employee cost. And so it's pretty easy to kind of back into what their revenues are based on what kind of number of employees they have. But what is the growth of the business? If someone has a business and 20 employees and growing, you need to know about that business, okay? 20 employees and growing. Do they have people issues, okay? Or are they having a hard time finding them? A lot of businesses are today, okay? That's a tough thing. Income taxes, you can always talk to them about, are you having any income tax issues? Listen, if you're a business owner, somebody asks you, do you have any income, and you're a ministry, that's not a question ministries ask, is it? Not normally. Most people in development don't ask that question. Guess what? They want you to ask that question, okay? They don't want you to speak ministry talk. They want you to talk business to them, okay? So ask them, do you have any of those? What about capital gains? Do you have anything where you're going to be facing? These are the things they think about. And then kingdom questions, okay? If you could give more and pay less taxes, would that be important to you? It's that simple, okay? But those are the issues the business owner is thinking about. 5 minutes. Key questions for businesses, okay? Help me understand your business, okay? Can y'all? These are great questions. Can you help me understand your business, Chandler? Tell me about what you do. How is it held? That means, is it an S Corp, C Corp? Is it an LLC? You need to know these things. You don't have to understand all of that, but we know that. But if you can find these things out, okay, it's really important. What's your tax liability like? There's two things that trigger complex or asset-based gifts. Two things. One, when they sell the company, there's an opportunity. Now, that doesn't happen every day, right? They may build it for 20 years and then sell it. Or they're a serial entrepreneur. It may happen more often. But the other thing that these business owners have every year is a tax liability. And they need to think about their assets to gift rather than the cash after they take care of things, right? So very important. Did you know you can give up to 30% of your income using capital assets? Here's the numbers. So how much of a deduction, how much can I deduct legally every year and get a deduction for? Okay, here's the math. You can gift up to 30% of your adjusted gross income with an appreciated asset. So if my income is $1 million a year, I can gift $300,000 of an appreciated asset. And that costs me nothing. That could be paper, right, of my business. That could be a lot of assets, okay? And then I can gift an additional 20% in cash that year, which brings me to 50%, okay? That's what's allowable by the IRS, okay? Now, if you gave strictly cash and you didn't give any asset, you can give up to 60%. So when we talk about 10% giving, that's the IRS is more generous than what we teach them from Scripture, okay, if you want to know the truth. And then last year and the last 2 years, you were able to give 100% against your adjusted gross income if it was all cash. And if you didn't know about that, that's why you need this information. We had people give worlds of money last year away because they could, and they knew the next year they needed the deduction, okay? So it's really important. Are you planning to sell your business? What if you ask that question and they're like, you know, I am. I'm thinking about that. When? Now, you don't try and carry it. Call me, okay, and say, here's what I've got. Can I have you talk to someone who specializes at the point of sale to reduce tax in favor of more giving? Okay? It's that simple. People are selling. Remember how much there's going to happen, there's going to be this year. It's trillions of dollars. Major donor life issues. And I wish I could spend a lot of time here. But personal legacy. These are the conversations major donors want to have. They don't necessarily want to hear all about your plans. I'm sorry. I don't know who laughed, but I appreciate the laugh. Okay, here's the reality. What we typically do is come in and say, here's what we're doing, here's what we're doing, here's what we're doing. And what they want you to do is come in and say, tell me about your business. Tell me about your personal legacy you're wanting to leave. How does that relate to your business? What is the family legacy? What are you going to do with your business? You got three kids. Two of them are a train wreck, and one of them works in the business. How are you going to pass that along? Okay, what are you thinking about in terms, okay, you guys, these are the things your people want to know about. Financial legacy. They may be thinking about giving a lot of money away, but they don't know how to do it or when to do it. And how many people want a gift and see the result of their gift while they're alive? Make sense? Okay, kingdom legacy. All of these are the things that you need to know. You can put them on a 3x5 card. And when you go do your donor relations work, fill that thing up, okay? That's what they want to know. Business legacy. What do they want to do with this thing? Let me give you this information, okay? Thanks, Chandler. All right. But here's some things you can take advantage of when you leave here. Our family legacy workshops, okay? They typically are 8 to 12 couples that come in. And if you've got donors that you're like, I would love for them to go through that, because what they learn is what's God's plan for family. That's where it starts, and that's where we talked about the Rechabites, the sons of Asaph, the sons of Perez, okay? And what's God say about family? And he thinks generationally. The purpose of family is generational, right? It's to be generational. Okay, and then the second thing you do is we talk about what is your spiritual vision for your family? What's your spiritual mission? Okay, and then you have your values, and those values shape your vision and your mission. And then you write that out the second day, and you have a written spiritual vision, mission, and value statement. And then you end by talking about a donor advised fund. We do, not as a, oh, you need to get a donor advised fund, but you need to have a place to have conversation around difficult issues. How many people don't talk or talk to your parents? How many of your parents shared with you how much about their finances? A few, okay? Most don't, and everyone should, okay? Because you don't want to leave them in a breath, and they don't know what's there. And if you do have wealth, I mean, one of my best friends in Nashville passed away a couple years ago. And when he died, he left millions and millions of dollars in a thriving business, and his wife had no idea, nor did his kids, because he said, I didn't want them to know, I didn't want to change who they were, okay? But now they're picking up the pieces to try and figure out how to deal with that. And now how do you share? These were Dad's values. Well, thank goodness they went through a family legacy workshop 4 months before he died. And when he died, he and his wife had cemented they had it in writing. How many businesses you go to and they have their values and their mission and vision written on the wall? All of them do. Almost all of them have their mission and values and their what that on their wall. That's what they have. We have it in our house. We've got stories behind our values, things that are painful that changed our direction in life. And so you talk about those. That's what your kids want to hear, are the pain points that you have, not your successes, right? How did you struggle, Dad? Okay, tell me about that. How'd you overcome? And so every time we're with our kids, it is very intentional. This is stuff that could benefit the kids you're working with, right? Honestly. So number one, we got family legacy workshops that you can attend, you can bring people to. Number two is we've got a thing called Day with David Green. Over here in the blue shirt and the white sweater, tell me your name again.
Holly.
Holly is from Oklahoma City, okay? And we do a Day with David Green. We do about 6 of them a year where we'll bring in either 8 couples, or the next one we're doing, there's actually 25 couples. And you spend 24 hours with David, Barbara, their kids, and their third generation. That's where I really learned the power of how to raise big money, was put wealthy people in front of wealthier, more generous people. I don't have to do a whole lot if I can do that, okay? But you can bring your people to that. And I would encourage you to say, how do I get some of my people there? It's game-changing, okay? That's number two. We've got a Women of Purpose program that is out there, because 70% of the women are going to inherit the wealth. we've built a whole program out for just for women. We've got, I'll have to think about it a minute. Oh, if you said, how can we work with y'all? And I want you to help us raise some of this big money. There's two ways to do it. We've got a consulting business that we started during the pandemic, and so I'm working with IMB, International Mission Board. That's, you know, who they are. Okay, Voice of the Martyrs, Fellowship of Christian Athletes, Abilene Christian University, Lubbock Christian University, a couple of other colleges, and there's some big, big ministries that have said, we need help. We don't know this at all. This is all new stuff. Now, so there's two ways you can go about doing that. One, you can pay us a fee like you do other places, and we come in and do a certain scope of work for you. Or two, you can pay us nothing on the front end. And what you do is you identify the people that fit, okay, and then you call us, and then there's a success fee on the back end. If we bring money to the table, then you pay us on the back end. And we think that's a pretty good deal for people. So those are some things you can tap into. All right, I'm going to stop.